The opinions you love. The history you crave. This is Rant DM Radio.
Xbox One is here. Well, it's not here yet, but it's revealed to the world, to the masses. Everybody knows about it.
Well, I wouldn't say knows about it. I would say people are aware that there's a system coming. Their awareness levels are very fluctuant.
They held their conference a couple days ago. I get excited about these stupid conferences or, you know, whatever they're called. It's not that I was
pep rallies.
Yeah, pep rallies, exactly. which is weird because I hated pep rallies in high school. I thought they were so dumb. But now I love these things. But I wasn't anticipating it. There's a difference between, like, getting excited for it and because I didn't even know, like, I had forgotten it was going to happen until the day before. And I think the Microsoft Facebook page posted something about it. I was like, oh, yeah, that's tomorrow. Okay. And so I sit down and I watch these things. And it's just something that's on during the day because there's nothing really on during the middle of the day in these weekdays. So it's like, eh. What's most fun about it is the reaction afterwards. You know, it's like the reaction that this thing has gotten so far has been hilarious and has been a lot of entertainment for me at least. But you look forward to these things?
You know, over the years, it's one of those things where I think every new system that comes out has been a little less of me being excited like a kid with a bunch of unopened Christmas presents under the tree. Like, right. I'm more one of those. I want to see all the specs, see what the system really is capable of doing, and get a nice look at, you know, potential release titles. But I think the more, especially with the way the last two generations have gone before this, there's just such a uncertainty to, you know, what you're really going to get from launch release. And, you know, are the titles that they're boasting in the videos, will they even actually see the light of day, let alone, you know, actually be a fully functional, awesome game? So there's a lot of questions, I think, that when you see these, you know, hype trailers and things, and, you know, it's all overwhelming. And, I mean, a lot of times, like, I get that it's more of a magic show, less of a informative sit down. Because, I mean, especially when you looked at what Microsoft did, where it was like they flashed the system hardware specs for maybe, you know, 20 or 30 seconds, and then they're just like, on to the more of these features.
Right. And there's people that really care about the specs, like you said. And then there's people that don't care at all. Who, when that flashes up, their mind kind of goes blank. You know, all they care about is, does it work or does it do what it's supposed to?
There's definitely the allegiances. They just want it. You know, right. The Xbox fanboys want theirs. The Sony fanboys want theirs. The Nintendo fanboys want theirs.
Whatever you say, it's not going to matter. No. They're going to buy it regardless.
Exactly,
because it has Xbox on it.
Exactly.
And when they brought out these specs, everything looked somewhat comparable to what Sony did with PS4 when they brought that out. But then they dropped on us that there's going to be three operating systems working at the same time, which is going to take up 3 gigs of...
Only RAM. Windows. Only Windows operating systems. You know, It is not a true Windows operating system until it's fully grabbed your resources and rifled through it all.
Right. It's just ridiculous how much that was. And then, you know, they said, well, it's going to be a 500 gigabyte hard drive. And I saw a lot of people go, oh my God. We don't have any idea how much these new games are going to take up. You know, that might be good. That might be kind of up to par with what we have now. We just don't know. If anything, this conference and most conferences like this, all they do is raise more questions instead of answer any.
Absolutely. And, you know, like right now, I have the 500 gig PS3, and, you know, I download a lot of games via PS Plus, or, you know, now games are coming with full install features like MLB The Show. It has two install features, one that is just a simple, you know, install base that lets the game run a little smoother, and when you go into the options, it gives you the option to fully download the game into your hard drive, and it is nice to have that 500 gigs, but I think with a 500 gig base, and you know that both companies will have cloud saving as part of their, you know, whatever package they're going to offer, Gold or PlayStation Plus or whatever, so I mean, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, the hard drive space in the systems themselves will get bigger, or you're just going to see more things that you can access via the cloud. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if eventually your PSN games will be totally cloud unless you want them on your system, kind of like Steam. You can play them online through, or you have to download them and put them in offline mode.
Right. Yeah, exactly. 500 might seem like a lot right now. It's not going to be a lot, because Microsoft is going to make you install every single game, and that's going to eat up that hard drive eventually. So you're going to have to pick and choose. You're going to have to take games off unless you use that cloud system like you were talking about. And for those people who are complaining about being the system being online, you know, and that was another tricky thing. What they did was they didn't come out and say either. They came out and said, well, it doesn't have to be online all the time. But they didn't explain, and they later explained this, I guess, in some brochure that they handed out. The system has to connect to the internet once every 24 hours. And it's just going to be ridiculous. People are going to be forced into these cloud saves whether they want to or not eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they really, in my opinion, you know, as far as, like, needing these auto updates and things like that, it's more of a state of how games are. And, I mean, we can even go revisit what we were just talking about, where I think you're going to see a lot more games like EA. Most of the game will be sitting Origin side, and your disc is pretty much just going to be a key that goes in, and it probably downloads, you know, a gig or less of information off the actual disc, and the rest of it's probably just cooking off the Origin servers.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, when the games are being released so they need giant patches when they come out, what's really the point of putting anything basically besides a DRM key on the disc when you're going to be patching everything anyways?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's probably what it'll end up being. But, you know, for me and you, that hooking up to online every 24 hours is not a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for someone out in the boondocks, and you and I have both had many experiences with these people. These people do exist, okay?
These people.
These people do exist. We've dealt with them a lot, and they're going to be devastated. They're going to be trapped in the previous generation until they can get internet where they're at.
Sure, but this is nothing new.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's true.
These are the kids that, you know, they show up and they're devastated when you don't have PS1 games anymore. And then they're devastated when you don't have PS2 or GameCube games anymore. And I feel for those kids because, you know, to kids, you know, they don't care that, you know, a lot of them just want games. And so to them, you know, having 20 or 30 great games on a console means a lot. You know, it's not about begging their parents to drop $300 or $400 to make them happy, you know, to play the next Call of Duty on the next big system.
Right. I mean, these kids are at a, they're in a secluded area where a lot of the times they don't have people to play with outside or, you know, do that kind of stuff with. So they're relegated to chores and playing video games, probably.
Which, yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of parents now that would say that's probably a pretty good idea.
Right.
Get these kids out and active. But, you know, it's, I think that as far as, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Sony takes a similar route as far as needing online updates. But the difference between Sony and Microsoft is Sony already has the ability to tap like their existing Blu-ray players and things like that. They update firmware without the internet. So I could see Sony trying to do something where it does updates using the same installation technology that they have on their other systems.
Right. They've got the experience, basically.
Exactly.
I mean, Sony's sitting pretty right now because everybody's kind of just, you know, I think the figure was like 75% of people who took this poll were, you know, disappointed by the Xbox One reveal.
And that's not that surprising. I mean,
yeah, you're asking gamers. This was a gamer poll. And they
exactly.
They didn't really do anything for gamers at that reveal. It's just, Sony's kind of sitting pretty right now. I'd like to think that Sony is going to try to, you know, think ahead from this whole situation. Hopefully, you know, years ago, they were like, well, Xbox is going to try to do this with used games or whatever, or the internet. That's probably going to piss people off. Let's try not to do that so much, you know, but try to innovate in other areas with the internet. I'm hoping that's their plan. That's what their plan was, but they could be kind of holding out right now. You know what I mean? They could be, their plan could be the same exact plan, but they're kind of sitting, you know, laying low in the bushes and kind of waiting for all the heat to be brought on Microsoft. And then they're going to come out and say, well, that's just the standard and that's how we have to do things. So.
Sure. And I mean, there's a lot of things that scared me about that conference, but there's a lot of things that made me excited too. One of the things that I'm really excited about is I think we're almost to the point where we can stop calling consoles like the generation of this console and the generations of this console, because we're almost to the point now where now you've got, you know, we've been talking a lot about Microsoft and Sony. And certainly not taking away anything from Nintendo, but I think that's a huge factor in why they're not in the discussion and what's going to continue as a theme overall is it really looks like these three companies are establishing completely different paths. And when I saw the Xbox One reveal, I didn't see a console. I saw a direct competition for Apple TV. I saw Microsoft making a push for brand loyalty, and, you know, in the long run, you know, like you said, the gamers are upset. But
right.
I think Microsoft looked and went, you know, look at this demographic of, you know, hardcore gamers, and they look and go, you know, we don't have the super hardcore gamers, but we're gonna have way more money coming from these people that are looking at plug and play entertainment centers called Xbox Ones. And judging from where, like, Sony, you know, they do well in the areas that Microsoft doesn't. They kill in Japan. Microsoft can't gain any footing there. They kind of did with the 360, but it didn't really gain the foothold that they really thought they were going to have by releasing the system early. And they even put a lot of focus on releasing Japanese titles that didn't sell well at all.
Yeah.
And now we're sitting where Sony is coming out saying, these are the games we're working on. Like, check all these games out, get excited. Microsoft is going, look at all of these features that are on our system. And, you know, with all of our Windows peripherals, you're going to be able to just synchronize yourself into this Windows bubble and, you know, use your Windows 8 phone to get on your Xbox and all the other, you know, bells and whistles that come with basically investing into their brand. And Nintendo's kind of sitting on the back burner going, well, if you don't like frills and you don't like gimmicks and you really don't care about, you know, it might take us a year to get Assassin's Creed over here from the big systems, but we'll have a few tricks with the tablet controller and, you know, you'll be able to talk your wife into getting a Wii U for the kids a lot easier than you are a nice new PS4 and Xbox One for yourself. So, you know, it sets you in a position where Nintendo's looking at their core audience, which is still kids, that they're the one company that still looks and goes, we still have an identity with families and kids, and these two juggernauts that, you know, have way more reach as far as, you know, entertainment platforms go, we're just going to stick to doing games.
Well, I mean, make no mistake about it. Both of these systems are going to be very similar. You know, they're going to be very similar in the sense that they're both going to play games and they're both going to provide entertainment outlets for you. It's just what they're doing is the same presentation but swapped. So where Sony featured games in their first presentation, they're going to do the entertainment stuff, you know, probably next month. Maybe a month or two away. They're going to show you that, yes, it plays Netflix. Yes, it does Hulu. You know, it's going to show you all those different things. I don't know what they have up their sleeve, really.
See, that's really what I liked about Sony's presentation over Microsoft's is, you know, I shouldn't have to ask if my console is going to stream Netflix at this point. That should not be some crazy, like, oh, we added it again. Congratulations. I don't feel there's a pat on the back for things like that. And that's one of the things that really seemed awkward was, you know, and I had a couple customers yesterday very convinced that they're selling Microsoft's Xbox One as this, like, plug in the internet and you've got all the free cable and all these apps and all these things just at your fingertips. And there was a lot of misleading information initially a couple E3s ago when they started talking about getting into the apps and things like that. And people were thinking that, you know, their gold subscription was going to cover all of these other things. So, you know, even though you were an HBO subscriber, you were going to get it for free on your Xbox. And I'm seeing this all over again with the One, where people are coming in thinking that essentially, you know, you're going to pay for your subscription and log in and you're just going to have all of this free content.
Right. Which, and, well, another thing was your account from the 360 will not carry over. So all those games you bought on Xbox Live will stay on that system in that generation. And, you know, if you bought Xbox Live, if you're paid up for a couple years, yeah, well, that's going to be, you know, you're going to have to repay for this new system.
Yep. And what's really interesting about that, too, you know, on another point is on the Xbox dashboard, when you look, people have a little icon next to their name, a little number, and that's the number of years they've had Xbox Live.
Right.
So I'm curious to see if when you renew, you know, on the same email address or whatever, is it going to actually carry that over, or is everyone going to be starting from scratch?
That's a good question. I would say that probably everyone's starting from scratch. Because if you start everyone from scratch, you're kind of appealing to the mass that says, oh, I get to start over. You know, you're no better than I am because I can get gold, you know, gold right from the start. You know, and it sounds so stupid. Let me tell you this, Wario. I'm guilty of going after achievements in my day. You know, I checked out games just to get the achievements, and that was for a very short stretch of time, but I'm guilty of doing that. I really don't get the appeal of achievements except for just to brag to your friends. But people love bragging. And it's like, oh, I did this in this game and you didn't. I've had this gold subscription for longer than you have and this and that. And it's made Microsoft so much money that Sony had to emulate it with the trophies, you know, later. That wasn't a design that they came up with when they made the system. They said, oh, we got to compete with that. Let's do this. And it's a very interesting market. And especially online, as things evolve, especially with PS4, they're going to have that hub where you can literally go into somebody else's hub and like check out what they're doing, if they're streaming and all that crazy stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's going to be – I think it's going to be incredible. The share button is going to be fantastic. Xbox One is going to have some sharing function as well. I know that they announced the DVR, so you can record gameplay. But it didn't specify if you could stream gameplay. Now, as far as I know, you're going to be able to stream gameplay on PS4 through Ustream. They partnered up with that.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Skype goes, though, I really feel like Microsoft didn't really, you know, kind of fully... They didn't really
rip the go after off.
It. They sure. own Skype, you know?
Yeah, that was shocking to me, too. It really was. I didn't
explore that at all. And, you know, okay, you can Skype in your living room. That's cool. You know, I don't think I'd ever do that because where I Skype is not in my living room. But I guess if you're – I want to know if you can do that while you're playing games.
See, that was my – the whole thing I was thinking was, so, you know, your Hotmail became a Skype, right?
Right.
Well, why wouldn't you have your Skype integrated into your gamer tag?
Yeah.
I mean, why would you even bother having any other service, especially with all the, you know, all the built-in infrastructure of Skype? That's one of the biggest detractors of the PlayStation 3 is the voice chat functionality. It's pretty sad.
Right, and I don't use it, but I've heard it being used, and it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't think Sony's going to focus on that with PS4. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's not up to snub with the 360. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. The crazy part is, you know, initially there was this huge talk about this new operating system and how, you know, they were looking to implement it on the PS3. And they've gone through and patched things and made things look neater. Like, the store runs a lot smoother. It's a lot easier to find things. But overall, you know, it's still very much XMB, so... I'm wondering if a lot of the focus that they had initially went into the PS4 operating system because they definitely, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, the 360's interface is outright friendly. I actually, my favorite was the original interface that they thought was too cluttered, but...
Yeah, I really can't say I've enjoyed any of their interfaces. This one I hate, though. The Windows 8 style, where it's got the different
We don't care blocks. If you have Kinect, your operating system will look like it.
Exactly. It's I don't know. To me, it was really poor in its execution. I mean, I get the idea of it, pinning your favorite apps everywhere. But to me, it's just all over the place. And I really like the XMB. I think it's really simple to figure out, you know, it's
nothing's buried under blades and blades of options.
Right, exactly. I think the hardest thing on the XMB is the settings. You know, sometimes the settings can be a little confusing.
I get cranky when something falls off of my quick play. Like if I'm just messing with other games and something that I play regularly is no longer able to be booted through the quick play function, I get pretty mad.
Well, I mean, there's so many different ways you can set up, which is also cool, because you can set it up to where you can have each individual game right there to press a button and play.
Exactly.
Or you can just throw it all into a folder and keep things neat that way if you've got OCD. My son changes it all the time, so it's new every single time I play. And, you know, regardless, I'm still able to find everything. And,
oh, yeah, and at least you can just push square and adjust it back.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the friends thing, you know, that could be a little more fleshed out. But overall, the XMB, I like it. I hope they carry it over to PS4. I know that they're going in a different direction. We saw what their system is going to look like. And I don't want to knock it until I try it, but it looks a lot like the PlayStation Store does now.
Right. So. I mean, I figured that's exactly what they were doing with the PlayStation Store update. I figured I was getting a good look at what the PlayStation 4 store looked like. And I actually really like it. I like the way that it keeps things more separate and the options are better laid out on the left sidebar, a lot better than in those little icons that they used to have.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like the icons were so tiny on the old PlayStation Store.
Yeah, exactly. That's 100%. I mean, again, and with the avatars for like friends and stuff, I really don't feel like it's as personal as Xbox was, or even Nintendo's Wii with the Miis. But I also like that it's a little more mature.
Right.
In a sense, I guess. I mean, you know, I've got an Ape Escape monkey on mine. And it's, how mature can you get
with that?
I was
going to say I have a purple dog with 3D glasses. I don't know how mature that is, but I guess the options are out there. I mean, for me, I mean, and, you know, I certainly don't want to sound like I'm being a favorite because I have both systems. And,
yeah, me too.
You know,
yeah.
And yeah, it's a different experience. And what I've enjoyed the most out of these systems is especially seeing how other people have jumped between the PS3 and the 360. Like, I have a buddy who, when he initially was looking at systems, he had waited till well after launch. And, you know, he was more looking for something just to watch movies on, and he wasn't really looking for a gaming system. And he initially got the PS3, and that was more of, you know, hey, it's a Blu-ray player, you know, it has, you know, it's not really a group functionality player, and, you know, you're not going to get a lot of the multiplayer stuff that you see on the 360. And his whole initial thing was, that's great, I'm only going to play single player games anyways, it doesn't really matter. And as he got into the PS3, he started getting more into games. He became like a rabid trophy hunter. You know, and basically like rekindled a love in gaming that he hadn't had since he was a kid. And that initially, you know, it fit everything he needed till he started playing multiplayer games. And instantly, you know, everyone's going, I'm going to get that, but it's on the 360, and I'm going to get that on the 360. And, you know, he got into games with clans and things like that, and, you know, next thing you know, he's talking about getting a 360 and gets one, and he has both systems. And I think this, what ended up happening with a lot of people with this last generation is, I don't know of many people who bought just one of the systems.
Yeah, but I mean, the first system I got was the 360. That's the one I decided, okay, let's go ahead and do this, because it was affordable. The problem is, kind of being, you know, kind of being in the middle at the start of these systems' lifespans is tough, because they're so expensive, and you can't get both. Most people can't get both, unless you trade in every single thing you have, and then you're stuck with a system with one or two games. And, you know, it's so you kind of have to, you feel like you have to pick a side. Very, I mean, unless you're Nintendo, and if you're Nintendo, hey, that's cool. You know, we'll get to Nintendo in a bit, I swear. but I mean, with this whole thing, I see a lot of people that I would expect to kind of jump on Xbox ship right now. I see them saying, you know, this is not what I want, which is shocking, because these are Call of Duty people, and, sure, you know, the Ghost was shown as one of the few games that Xbox did show. it focused on dogs, and now that's become a whole big thing, you know. And so I'm kind of shocked at some of these things. I'm looking at a poll right now that was taken by about 2,000 people. So it's relatively small, but still significant. It's basically asking what system they're going to buy when it comes out. It has Xbox One, PS4, both, or neither. The PlayStation 4 has 48% of the vote right now. Over Xbox, who has 23, both has 7, and neither has 20, that they're sticking with the last generation of consoles. And that's another big thing. You know, people weren't even ready for this next gen of consoles. They, even though it's been, what, 8 years since the start?
Yeah.
Yeah, 8 years, which is unheard of. You never go that long without a new console.
I was actually just having that conversation with someone earlier, about a couple days ago, where they were making that, like, they've barely had, you know, any time to develop these systems. And I was thinking, boy, you know, they've had plenty of time to, you know, pretty much say all they need to say, and to know that, you know, there's still plenty of games coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll still have to see with Microsoft, because I don't think it's a fair assessment with how fast they axed the original Xbox. But you know that, you know, eventually they're going to call it quits on the 360 side of things, and that brand's going to wrap up. I don't think they'll do it as quick, but I think longevity-wise, the people that are deciding to go, well, we'll ride it out with, you know, what we've got. I think if you have a PlayStation 3 right now, you're probably a little more comfortable, but there's just no telling, you know, how long the longevity of, you know, all the servers being up and, you know, no weird bugs that start acting up on systems and things like that. Because, you know, I think eventually, you know, that's one of the things, like, you know, we both collect games. One of the things that really bothers me about these online activated systems, and one of the things that at first, you know, I wasn't sure about getting into these kind of systems is, you know that eventually they're just going to be a brick unless people learn how to mod the operating systems and, you know, make them better functioning gaming rigs.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what I'm very hopeful for with the PS4, is that the developers are all saying, listen, this is something that does not need to be tweaked. It's great how it is, and we can make games for it, which is so refreshing, because it was a complete 180 with the PS3. People were saying, we cannot make games on this. It's too advanced. It's not where we are as developers. You know, and a lot of the times, a game that would be released for the same system would look and play a lot worse than it would on the 360, which is ridiculous. You know, it should be up to par at the very least, you know. But if you've got advanced hardware in there, it should be better. They just didn't know how to use it. I think we're starting, you know, with PS3, I think everybody understands it now. Maybe not everybody, but enough people to where the games being released for it are good.
Well, and if you'll remember too, initially there was a giant stink where when at first Sony wasn't so warm with giving out their dev kits, and they were charging a lot more money than Microsoft. Right. Yeah. And they had a distinct advantage. And I would say that if anything, the way that all of these developing houses have been shuttered, there's a lot of people that maybe would have harbored ill will towards developing towards the PS4 that aren't around anymore to really do it.
That's a good point, yeah.
Which can be, the same can be said for Microsoft, where, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what companies get roped into making, you know, Kinect games for launch that end up, you know, getting in big trouble financially and things. Because, as you know, the one thing that really irked me was, you know, seeing, you know, Forza being like really the only game that they can call their own popping up.
Yeah. They had okay, let's go through the games real quick, because there wasn't very many of them. there was Forza, there was Call of Duty, of course, Ghosts, And then there was a very strange looking game, which I don't want to say strange looking game because we didn't get to see any of the game really.
A bunch of CGI.
Yeah, and even then, live action trailer, you know, in the trailer, which
was like, oh yeah, that's right.
Why would you do live action? I mean, I get the whole thing. Anyway, okay, I'm getting sidetracked. But Remedy is making this new game, and I forgot what's the game called again.
Slips my memory right now.
So that's not a good sign.
No, and then that has more to do with me being really excited for Alan Wake 2 being announced.
Yeah,
and not getting that, so that had a lot to do with why I was looking at the preview going, Quantum Break is the game. That's, and I mean, you know, I'm certainly not going to, you know, say that it's not going to be great because it's made by the people that did Max Payne and Alan Wake. So
exactly, we're not bashing the game because we didn't even see it.
Exactly, but
we don't know really what it's about other than maybe time travel, maybe.
All this quantum business. But what shocked me is, you know, if you're going to have Call of Duty be such a highlight, why would you have another shooter as, you know, one of your big leaked games, so to speak?
Yeah. And listen, I understand. I guess the big theme of this whole conference or this whole presser or whatever was that Microsoft has powerful allies in EA and Activision, because they both, you know, even though these games, and that's the thing that I did not understand, both these games, or, you know, the EA Sports franchises and Call of Duty Ghosts are both going to be released for both systems. Absolutely. There's just going to be extra content available first on the Xbox One, which to me sounds like an E3 announcement, you know, that sure. You pepper in. You
sure.
Know,
like not, what they did that with Black Ops 2.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's certainly not some, you know, new thing to have exclusive, you know, time releases and all that crap.
Yeah, especially for Xbox, because they usually get the time sensitive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if that's going to sway anybody to buy an Xbox. Do you?
I think that the people that are already going to buy Call of Duty are going to get Xboxes. I mean, it's a game that I will say that I see more Black Ops 2 going out on a PS3 now, but it's always been more of a 360 property.
Right.
And I, you know, that's why I think you can tell, it's very apparent, you know, that's the kind of gamers they're going for. Because to them, you know, if they can get the crowd that wants the TV on their system, they can flip between the TV and their Call of Duty and their sports games. They've adapted their system for people that they're, you know, every sports game every year is a brand new game. Every Call of Duty every year is a brand new game. And it doesn't matter that, you know, most of your average gamers, the first thing they're going to complain about with any Call of Duty and any sports game is it's the same game. Right. And it's only the hardcore people that really, they don't care. They just want the next installment.
Yeah, and I spoke to a customer today who kind of, he came up to the counter and he said, listen, you know, I just want to buy the Uprising map packs for Call of Duty. I was like, okay, that's fine. And he's just kind of got this funny face on, and he's, you know, like, almost like he's ashamed. And he's like, man, I'm going to get the next Call of Duty. It's like, that's okay, you know, that's cool. He's like, no, but it's really stupid. You know, it's not one of those games that I can really get into the story or anything like that, but I just need to get it, and I need to play it. I said, listen, that's not a bad choice. If you're going to spend $60, it's a comfort zone thing. You know it's going to be a solid title. You know you're going to have fun with it. You're going to play with friends. You're going to buy these map packs. you're going to get your enjoyment out of it. You know, don't feel too ashamed that you like Call of Duty or that you're getting these games every year. As a sports fan, I know that, you know.
Exactly.
I've purchased Madden every year since Madden 2002. It was the first year that I purchased it with my own money, and I went out and bought it every single year after, and I continue to do so. And I don't want to speak down to people who buy or play Call of Duty or anything like that. We're not trying to do that. We're not doing that. But I just want to get over the fact that Call of Duty is going to sell regardless.
Yes, and that's, I mean, I certainly don't understand the crazy disdain for the people that buy games like that, because to me, I think, you know, it's a culture. The people that play those types of games, you know, I mean, as someone who loves Halo, one of the things that I really enjoyed about Reach was how rich the online was and the stat tracking and things like that. And so to see it in that military realm with, you know, the modes that are more specific to that type of game, I can see why people are totally addicted to that. You know, when I was a kid, one of my favorite things to do was run around and play army. And I mean, more or less with games like that and games like Battlefield, that's what you get to do. And with the clans and everything else, you know, the immersion levels in that, you know, actually came along a lot faster than, you know, how long it took for sports games to finally be able to do online franchise and things like that. So, you know, I remember on Dreamcast playing NFL 2K2, and we had a player season with people actually controlling the teams, and we were passing the controller around going, one day, you know, we're going to be able to hook up all online and play this, you know, as we're hoping the 56K modem in the Dreamcast stays hooked up online.
Yeah. I mean, you know, online is becoming such a, not becoming, it's become such a huge thing for some games, you know, and it's kind of divided everybody. You know, we didn't have this division a decade ago.
And you'll remember again, too, just during the 360 launch, how they pushed that all games had some element of live.
Right. And even with the original Xbox, live mm-hmm. was a big deal. They wanted to push that hard. And it was in its infancy, and I didn't have it when I was, you know, when I had my Xbox. But, you know, I'd go over to my cousin's house, and we'd play online Madden, and I had a lot of fun doing it. Now, with the 360, they just blew it up completely, and they said, okay, well, here's Gears of War, and here's all these great games, Halo. They're fun to play, and you can play them literally forever, because you can play online with these. And that just, I think what that did was, I think that kind of hurt gaming in the sense of, now nobody needs to go out and buy another game because they're finished with this game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see that thought process, but like, that's the same kind of process that I'm not so hip on with used games, where, you know, these developers get upset because people think their game sucks and they get rid of it. And they're bitter that people go in and they go, wow, this game, you know, how many times are you working and someone comes in and goes, wow, there's that many used copies of this game already?
Yeah, what's wrong with it?
Yeah, exactly. And what can you do?
Right.
So it's like a lot of times people walk in and the proof is on the wall. When you look over and you go, holy crap, why is there 40 copies of Brink on the wall and it came out yesterday? You know?
Right. And, you know, price point and everything like that. You know, working with games for so long, you get all these sort of signs to tip you off that maybe other people don't know. But if a game is relatively new and it's already down to $15, like say a Duke Nukem, that's kind of a red flag. You know, you probably shouldn't do that. And I understand that developers are angry at that, but used games, if they're going to phase them out, which I still don't think this will phase it out, but this will definitely hurt it. Used games are going to hurt the culture if they're not here anymore, the video game culture, because people are going to start being really picky about what they buy.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, nobody's going to take a chance on Borderlands because it's too different and it won't sell. And it might, you know, it might turn too many people off. Borderlands is a fantastic fucking game. If that hadn't have, you know, I don't know about you, but with me, when someone would come into the shop and they're like, okay, you know, what should I buy? What's a great shooter? What's a great co-op shooter? And I'd say, Borderlands. That's the only game you need to get right now. And they'd look at it and they're like, oh, well, it looks like a cartoon. And it's like, no. Please play this game because it's fan-fucking-tastic. And there's different classes and it's split-screen, local co-op, or, you know, play online with friends. You know, they put so much work into this to make it such a great experience. And who's to say, had there not been, you know, the opportunity for people to take a chance on it, who's to say that would have gotten released at all? You know what I mean?
Sure. It goes back to your original statement with, you know, the guy with buyer's remorse, where, you know, you go, you're going to want something new anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's not going to be this incredibly unique experience, but you're still going to get some new gameplay elements. You're still guaranteed that there's going to be tons of people online playing. And, you know, if you're not the kind of person that goes to the game store every Friday and, you know, looking for the next big release, you, like you said, you're looking at your, you know, three or four games you buy a year or less, you know. And so for the kind of people that one new game, two new games a year is the only thing they care about, I can see, you know, a majority of those people being just your average grab a Call of Duty and head home type gamer. I mean, there are so many people, specifically, you know, where my store is, where we go, you know, we only see them for NBA 2K and Call of Duty. And when you look at games where you're going to get the best bang for your buck and, you know, they're not going to do anything crazy that's going to change, you know, the feeling you get when you play those games, those are two of the best ones.
Right. A guy came up to me today and he's like, okay, so I just bought an Xbox, bought it about a year ago, I guess. And whatever. Okay, so he's like, so I'm playing catch up. I was like, okay, that's understandable. Yeah, I mean, you missed a lot of great games, everything like that. And I said, you know what, your best option, and I said, listen, there's a lot of junk in there, but there's also a lot of good games if you haven't played them yet in that bin. And I pointed to the $14.99 and under bin.
Yes, yes, the treasure bin, like, as I call it.
I said, you've got to wade through some crap, but there's definitely some highlights in there that you'll have a lot of fun with. And guess what? You're paying under $15 for it. So if you're a guy, say the average gamer spends, and this might be a low amount, but they say they spend $250 a year on games. That's what, like four brand new games, maybe?
Thereabouts.
Yeah. So
whether you count collector's editions and DLCs and all the other ridiculousness goes along with it.
So many variables, but let's just say they're buying brand new regular edition games and they get about four. You can buy four brand new games, or you can spread that money out. If you wait, if you're willing to wait a couple months on a game, you're spending, you know, $20-$30 less. Sometimes even more if it's one of those Brinker.
Sure, exactly. Or you know, like you said, when you work in the game store, you start to learn, oh, hey, about, you know, 3 months after a game comes out, sometimes less, EA always drops the game to $40. And right, you can usually count on that. Like, in that first three-month window, there's going to be a spot. And usually it's, you know, what I've noticed with them is it's, if it's close to, like, having amazing sales numbers, they drop that $40 price point quickly so that they can get those sales numbers in. And if it's selling steadily, then you see it pushed out, you know, to around 3 months.
Right. Absolutely. And even brand new, those games, since they're released so close to the holiday, they always go on sale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course you could stretch your money that way too, but that means that publishers are going to have to put these games on sale quickly, And then people who buy them right away are going to start to feel cheated by that and start to say, hey, there's something going on here.
Sure. And I mean, like, you know, there's so many games that get lost in the holiday shuffle.
Yes.
Where, like, you know, when you hit that lull between about March and June, which seems to be even now, games are coming out in those months just so they can release, you know, unopposed. That's when people come back and they go, oh, what was that Dishonored game? Or, you know, what was this other game that I heard about? You know, because while all the other AAA games were coming out, you know, they were distracted by that one marquee game, you know?
Right, exactly. And it's kind of sad, but, you know, that's... unfortunately, I don't think people understand how cutthroat the game business is when it comes to... okay, GTA is buying all this marketing. So you see GTA, and do they need all that marketing to sell their games?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
But they buy it anyway because they can.
Yes.
They have the money to. So now when you walk into your game store, you see a banner hanging from the top of the, from the ceiling. That's GTA. You see a poster over here on the counter, that's GTA. You see the folded up boxes, that's GTA. And it's all over the place. And you don't need to see it that many times, you know. So that's taking space for other games. Like you said, you know, Dishonored is one of those games that, you know, it didn't sell phenomenally well. It went on sale quite quickly, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But every person that I heard picked it up, they loved it.
Yep.
They said, oh, this is an awesome game, you should try it, and this and that. And it's cool, but at the same time, it's not. Also, though, I want to say, and I was reading this earlier, publishers setting too high of expectations for their games with sales. And then you look to Square and what they were expecting Tomb Raider to sell. You know, it's sold over 3 million copies, and that wasn't good enough. And now they're tearing apart their whole business.
Right, which is absolutely asinine, because I would say it would be hard for me to put another game against Tomb Raider currently right now for Game of the Year.
Yeah, it got good reviews. It sold well. That's doing pretty good. I mean... If they were expecting to sell Call of Duty numbers, they were out of their fucking minds.
Right, exactly. No way. Especially, see, that's, you know, it has that reboot effect where, you know, people that look, oh, another Tomb Raider game. And the majority of people who have gamed for a long time, they're, you know, that's something that's played out to them or never really appealed to them, you know. Or they're the diehard Croft fans, and they're gonna buy that game whether it was a reboot or just another game. And so, you know, I think that they did not give it enough credit for, you know, it was a really well done game, and it deserves, you know, it deserves the team to at least get a chance to make another one. One of the things I thought that really hurt that game is they focused on making a multiplayer element instead of making a bigger single player, which would have probably made that game sell a lot better in the long run too, because that game came out when, you know, there really wasn't a lot of stuff around it at the time. So it was selling because, you know, when people need something to play, they're going to look. And a lot of times when I was on the clock, you'd see people go, so a new Tomb Raider came out, is this any good? And I'd say, as a matter of fact, it's really, really good, you know. And it would sell because people, they want something that, like you said, even with Madden and Call of Duty, something that's familiar, that resonates, they're willing to give it a chance before some weird-looking, you know, cover. Because, like, Far Cry 3 is a great example. People saw the cover, like, that looks crazy. Like, wow, how come I've never heard of this game before? And you're, and you know, and you're going, well, you know, these have been great games all along, but... you know, it hasn't really been until this ad campaign that I think they got a lot of the visuals done right, and it really resonated more with people coming out of E3, like, oh, what was that crazy game with the guy that was talking crazy, you know? So many people came in and asked about it. And, you know, it's a shame that while, like, you see more game media popping up on TV, they're still only hitting the games that everyone knows about. You know, you're not seeing people, you know, covering these fringe games or games that maybe should deserve a little bit more of a spotlight, and it's because it's all revenue based.
You know, a game like Ni No Kuni
exactly
got no press at all. I mean, I didn't see one goddamn ad for that game, but I think the fan base helped it out a lot.
I'd agree.
And it helped itself by having, you know, some great artwork on the cover, and you know, it's one of those games that catches your eye as soon as, like, I mean, there's a lot of those kinds of covers on the shelf, you know what I mean? There's a lot of anime style.
Sure, exactly. Shelf. Yeah, your Tales ofs, your Records ofs, your whatever's.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, a game that pops into my mind that always caught my eye whenever I was, because we, you know, we scan the walls to alphabetize everything, and one of those games that caught my eye every single time was 3D.GameHeroes, which.
Especially, you know, with your Minecraft-itis.
Yeah, that too. But it was like, oh my god, this looks like retro awesomeness. You know, I still haven't played it to this day, unfortunately.
What is wrong with you?
Exactly, I know.
I think it's like $10. Like, no,
I'm a son of a bitch. I know.
That's one of those games that you just know you just buy.
Yeah. I'm now officially ashamed.
I mean, that's one of those games. Even during Christmas, anybody I know has a PS3 that says they don't play that game because it's always been between about $10 or $15. It usually ends up in their hands.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't have it, to be honest with you. I've probably seen it a couple times, and I'm like, I should buy that. And I just don't walk out the door with it.
There were people, you know, that really wanted a more old school feeling game with Little Big Planet. Mm. And when those people were disappointed with Little Big Planet, I would hand them 3D.Hero and go, "This is really what you want."
I see, like, Little Big Planet's one of those that looks so creative and so different that I had to pick it up. I did. I enjoyed the hell out of it, especially playing it with other people. You know, my son loves the hell out of it, too. You know, he loves that game. He loves that, and he loves Minecraft and Terraria now. But it's one of those games that I love getting into the hands of the younger gamers. So if a younger gamer comes looking for a PS3 game, instead of handing them Call of Duty, you know, I hand them...
That's such a fucking foul to even hand a little kid called. Yeah. Here you go, kid. You can knife the hell out of stuff.
I've seen it happen many times before.
Oh, yes.
Call of Duty World at War, you know, like, there's no way a kid should be playing this game at all. You know,
yeah.
But it happens, I guess. But, I mean, real quick, going back to Tomb Raider, it had a lot of things working against it. Like, rebooting the series, mm-hmm. when people were getting really tired of things in media rebooting. And I would say that they took a big risk by changing the physical appearance of Lara. But that all worked out in the end. So, you know, those are risks taken, which are cool.
And I think, again, like, one of the weird things where it just didn't make any sense was... they released an HD collection right before it came out.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's like, why, if you're trying to reboot, why would you try to remind everyone of the other games? Like, that's working directly against yourself.
Yeah, exactly. They probably thought that would hype people up for this new one. I don't know, really, you know. But the thing they did have working for them was that it came out in a very dry spell of releases. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a whole lot coming out, and that was probably one of the most driest times I can remember for new games coming out.
You have to go back to like 07, 08 to even be to even be like the leading into the summer of 08, like waiting for E3. It was bad,
right? And that happens sometimes with games, and it sucks. Well, but
that's a great segue to back to the console launch, where here we go again, you know. And that's when you buy these new systems, you're going to see these advertisements for amazing looking games that may or may not ever see the light of day.
Yeah, that too.
Great example, Saints Row 1. Like, if there was ever a game that had people gnawing at the bit, was Saints Row 1, because here we go. It's this game that looks like Grand Theft Auto that's going to be out before a Grand Theft Auto has even been announced. And yeah, they're going to have this head start in what looks like more of a traditional Grand Theft Auto game than even San Andreas. And what I thought was crazy was, you know, it was one of those games they showed at launch, and then it would just be mysteriously pushed out farther. And then when it finally came out, the game was broken, really badly broken, and it pissed off a lot of people. That was one of those games where, especially when there was slim pickings when the system first came out, people were coming in like, you know, everything on black. Like, I'm taking this game home, and it better be the best damn game I've ever played, because it's been 3 months of shit of waiting for something worthwhile to come out, you know? And, I mean, to have had to stand there while you're seeing people justifying Fusion Frenzy 2 and justifying, you know, Cameo and these games that just at full price are ridiculous.
Right, which are, those are like $5 right now.
In the if that. I mean, and I if would that. Even question whether someone should pay $5 for Cameo, but
that's neither. That was a rare game, right?
It sure
rare.
Was.
Yeah.
What would you call it, antiquation or whatever, but made by Rare.
Yeah, Rare Ltd.
Yes.
So, let's cap this off by talking about Nintendo, because in the middle of everything, actually, I shouldn't say in the middle, underneath all this, underneath all this behemoth of just hate and disappointment and questions is Nintendo with the Nintendo Wii and the 3DS right now. I was looking, you know, people come in, they ask, hey, what's coming out soon? Anything good? And I looked, and it's just, again, it's so dry for a long period of time for the PS3 or the Xbox 360. Until GTA comes out, it's so dry. And I just kept thinking to myself, I should tell these people to get a 3DS. Because that's got the best lineup for games coming out. There are so many games, given they're all pretty much Nintendo. Well, there's so many games. Yeah. Nintendo, it's always been that way. I mean, at least
the whole hang up though is to buy Nintendo products, you have to be a fan of what Nintendo has to offer. And
absolutely. Well, they're still excellent games regardless.
I agree, but I also think that the 360 and the PS3 really cultivated an entirely different type of gamer. Like, people our age that never touched a controller when they were kids, because they were like, well, that looks stupid. That's just a bunch of blocky crap on a screen, and what do I care about it? And when they can see, like, sports games that actually look real and shooters that actually look real, and there were a lot of people that, you know, maybe weren't even gamers at all, or maybe, you know, had a system with a couple games as a kid, actually became bigger gamers, and they look at Nintendo as still that same, you know, it might as well be made out of play school plastic and have little, you know, BB horns on the side of it and all kinds of stuff, you know, like,
yeah.
And that's why I say, you know, when you, there has to be either, you know, an inner child within you that enjoys the games that, you know, you remember as a kid and you like the innovations, or, you know, it, you're someone who really likes those fringe RPG games that only the DS gets.
What I like about Nintendo is that they recycle their franchises, right? But they still find creative ways to update their games. Now, they do put out a lot of remakes, you know, but at the same time, especially with the new Link to the Past is coming out, they're still finding ways to innovate. And it's comforting to know that at least on Nintendo's end, maybe not the third party side, but on Nintendo's end, they're still going to put out, you know, 8 to 12 good games a year.
Sure. And I mean, like, that's the whole thing is a lot of people get mad because, you know, Nintendo doesn't have the answer to Master Chief or God of War or whatever, you know, right. And it's not,
they could, but they could turn Metroid into one of those things.
The most visceral shooter ever.
Right. Blowing people's heads off.
Samus. And, yeah, exactly. Give her a power sword and just let her fork people in half. I just think that, honestly, you know, Nintendo's doing fine with what they're doing. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they know their audience. They're not afraid to just say, this is who we're making games for. And I think that it's one of those scenarios where the answer given isn't good enough to the recipient, you know, where these people are just going, you know, they have no balls and they don't make, you know, they don't make games that I like. And it's like, well, not every, you know, you don't have to make everything for everyone. And, you know, if somebody decides, like, you know, because there are a lot of people that don't touch shooters, and, you know, your average guy that comes into, like, a game store or games on the weekends, they think that's ridiculous. Like, how could you absolutely play no shooters? And, you know, even me, like, I would say, like, it would be impossible for me to not play shooters because so many of the elements of games I like are shooters. Mm-hmm. You know, like, sure. Like, Fallout technically has shooter elements. Like, you couldn't stop me from playing that game.
Absolutely.
And it's just, you know, Nintendo has this Disney type quality to what they do, and, you know, you do go back, and that is one of the reasons why I like the handheld, because it more or less, you know, you get your Donkey Kong Country on your 3DS, you get your Marios, you know, and there's gonna be those variants of the big system games. All just like all the way back on original Game Boy. The difference is now the 3DS, you know, has games that are practically on par with the console versions instead of being a mere shade of what, you know, what it was.
Right. I mean, a portable handheld system is perfect for what Nintendo does.
Mm-hmm.
With their games, at least, because they're fun, pick up and play. You know, you don't have to sit down and be necessarily engaged with what you're playing. You can play it on the go, you can play it in the car, you can play it wherever, and still have as much fun as you are at home on a console. And I think that's where the Wii U kind of stumbles. If they're going to make a home console, they need to make it so that third parties can succeed on whatever console.
And that's why I think that's why they've taken their stances. You know, I think they see their core audience as being those people that don't care about, you know, they go, you know, hey, we've seen our sales from the Wii. The people that want Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed and those types of games, they're probably going to have the system that has those. And even though they're putting, you know, like Batman came out on Wii U and there's extra functionality with it. And I can see where, you know, Nintendo will probably have a lot more games along the way where, you know, hey, 6 to 8 months later, here's the Wii U version. It has some tweaks to it. You know, if you're a Nintendo fan, you've probably accepted that that's how it's going to be, because they're going to have to make things specifically for the Wii U until, you know, tablet integration becomes a normal part of gaming, which I don't see across the board. So it's like the beauty of where Nintendo stands now with third parties, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is something that you see more of, is then they already have games that are completed that they can go, hey, we'll pay you this much more to throw some functionality into it and release it on the Wii U. And, you know, developers can take a smaller team, attack the Wii U version and throw it out there, and, you know, it's going to bump their sales up a little more without a lot of effort, you know, without doing something that might take as long as, say, an extra DLC or something like that.
Right. When a behemoth like EA Sports has someone working for them that just comes out and says, this is a piece of shit, that's not a good sign. When EA Sports will not put out their titles that they know, even if we don't sell a million, trillion copies of, it's still worth it to put down like a dumbed down version on this console. When they're saying we're not even going to do that, that's bad.
I'll agree on one premise, and that's that the big reason why EA doesn't like Nintendo is they can't patch the hell out of their games like they do on the other systems, and so it's like, again, you know, it's like, hey, if you're one of those people that does not like EA at all, that might make the Wii look a little more attractive, because that's the whole thing, is, you know, they don't want to have to deal with constantly having their software be patchy, and that's one of the reasons that they're more selective than not about what kind of games show up. And that's why you know people look at it like they're being exclusive, in the sense that, you know, it's for, they don't like violent games, or they don't like, you know, certain aspects of certain games. But, you know, as well as I do, there's so much shovelware on the Wii, it's not even funny. Yeah. Like, yeah. So it certainly can't have to do with, like, some upper crust quality thing. It has to have something more to do with the functionality of the games themselves, and that they care that, you know, they're not going to have to have some ridiculous online element. Because the other thing is, Nintendo still is being and has always been super guarded about not... I think their fear of ever having it linked that a child was lured from a Nintendo system scares them so much that they wouldn't... There's a lot of connectivity things that you're just never going to get out of them. And I think that's the kind of things where they've carved their own spot out, and they have the client base where, you know, if people believe in that type of message, they should be supporting Nintendo. You know, those should be the people that, you know, when they're going, and, you know, of course, how many parents, well, I don't know why I'm buying this for my kid. And it's like, well, you know, you can stop this. You can not get your kid Saints Row the Third. It's completely legit with me. As a matter of fact, I would feel better if you didn't. I would appreciate not ringing up knowing that an 8-year-old's about to go off and play Saints Row 3.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, though, like, I think... I don't know if they should take a break or they should just do this permanently, but Nintendo should just focus on the 3DS. Because the 3DS, to me, feels like vintage Nintendo. It feels like a Super Nintendo and an N64 fucked the hell out of each other, and it made this perfect little baby. I love the 3DS so much, and I was very skeptical of getting one. Because I was like, okay, well, I'm going to buy it with Mario. I'm going to enjoy Mario, but am I ever going to buy another game again? I don't know, because I'm halfway in between. I like my mature games, and I like my Nintendo games and stuff like that, but I'm not going to buy every single game that comes out. But I enjoyed Mario, and there's a new developer. I've talked to you about this before, but the developer WayForward.
Mm-hmm.
They've been making games for a while, but they've mastered the art of taking an old game, taking what was great about that old game and refining it to modern gamers. And they did that with Adventure Time, which I don't think a lot of people got to play because they didn't make too many copies of it. But it is a phenomenal game. Yeah. And they did Batman Brave and the Bold. They're doing the DuckTales remake. So they're, you know, it's almost like I can buy, like, for people that know me, I've been going out trying to find these old games to play again because they're so much fun. They're so simple to pick up and play. It feels like I can go and buy that from at the store now, you know, sitting on the shelf, but it's also fresh. And what's even better is I can play it in any room of the house, and you know, it's not taking up a TV or something. Now, I think it would be cool for Nintendo to find a way to hook up your 3DS to a TV for certain games that don't need both screens. And just do away with this console nonsense. Because you can make all the games you're making right now for the Wii U and for the Wii, you can make those for the 3DS and they'd be almost the same. I really don't think these games are taxing the hardware at all. Yeah, I mean, I don't know for sure, but that's just what it seems like.
I mean, like, that's a lot to swallow. But, I mean, man, I don't see where, you know, like, I don't think if the, like, even if the 3DS could, you know, wirelessly transmit right to the TV, I don't think I would look up from my screen because I'm, you know, I don't think handheld gamers, you know, I don't think that necessarily speaks to that experience because, you know, when I'm playing a handheld, I'm usually enjoying the fact that I'm sitting somewhere away from a TV or, you know, that I have the TV free while I'm playing my handheld. And, you know, I think that what really their big focus should have been, and hopefully that it comes around soon, is you'll be able to link your accounts up between the Wii U and the 3DS to be able to have your content, you know, between both systems, because that's one of those things that should have been there right from the start. There shouldn't have been any question whether your, you know, virtual console games could be played on your 3DS and your Wii U, especially after everyone that had it on the Wii already had to go through that change again and yeah, buy things yeah. again. So it's, right,
I get that.
You know, as far as the 3DS goes, it's, I agree that, you know, between the two systems, that's definitely their best thing going right now.
Yeah, let me read the launch line or the release lineup for Nintendo games only for the 3DS. Tomorrow is Donkey Kong Country Returns, which I'll be picking up, and it got good reviews so far, and I know I'll enjoy it. But let me rapid fire these right here: Animal Crossing, Mario and Luigi Dream Team, Mario Golf, Pokemon Y and X, Mario Party 3DS, Legend of Zelda Link to the Past 2, Sonic Labyrinth, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, Tails Adventure, Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which I guess they're doing for Virtual Console or whatever it is, Dr. Mario, A New Shining Force. I mean, these are all coming out for the 3DS by the end of this year, supposedly. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe it bleed into 2014. But that's a hell of a lineup right there.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a lot of those games have already been released, you know, like,
well,
the Bean Machine is probably, Dr. Robotnik's Bean Machine is probably one of the most offensive games I've ever played. it's complete crap, but I mean.
And the Dr. Mario, and, yeah, you know.
I mean,
yeah.
And that's basically, the Bean Machine was a counter to Dr. Mario, and Dr. Mario is a vastly superior game.
Right. And, you know, I mean,
what I'm,
when you compare that to the Wii U, I think they have Pikmin 3. That's it.
I mean, yeah, it's weird too, because for not being at E3, you'd think they would be more upfront about anything that they were doing that's different.
Right, they're having a Nintendo Direct one of the days of E3 instead of having one of the big press conferences that they used to have every year up until this point. So
yeah, because their big thing so far really on the Wii U that I would think is probably Skylanders, outside of their other, you know, as far as third-party software goes. And, yeah. I mean, they're probably, like, you know, you're going to see, you know, your Wii Fit U and all that other stuff eventually. But, you know, I just...
I'm shocked that we have not seen a true Pokemon game on a console. And I get, I understand the accessibility of taking it with you everywhere, because you have to put a lot of hours into these games, you know, like 80 hours to get every single Pokemon plus. But I still can't believe it. We have not gotten a true one yet.
We could do a whole podcast. I mean, I don't want to. I definitely don't want to. I mean, we haven't known each other that long. I don't know if I'm comfortable talking about my Pokemon fandom that openly at this point. We might have to make that about 6 or 7 podcasts down the road. But, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things with that license in particular that just boggle my mind. And that, right. There's a lot of times where you can point to Nintendo and go, you don't like to make money. You clearly do not like to make money. I mean, it's one thing to be like Bethesda. Bethesda doesn't have like a giant web store. Before, they had no web store. Same with 2K. Like, Fallout and Borderlands, two of the biggest games they've made, they have one t-shirt that they sell. And then Fallout, you know, you maybe get one t-shirt here or there. They're finally just starting to massively, you know, market merchandise and things like that. And Nintendo, you know, they used to be one of the best marketing across the board as far as, like, putting their brand name on things that I've ever seen. It was so common to see kids wearing any Nintendo-themed shirt. And it's, you know, you look around and, you know, you might see a kid in a Pokemon shirt, you know, standard. Or you might see a kid in a Mario shirt here and there. But it just doesn't have, like... Nintendo, as much as they're still aimed towards the kids, it's crazy to me that, you know, you don't see, you know, Nintendo cartoons and things that solidified the brand for at least when I was a kid. You know, the little Saturday morning cartoons were what, you know, kids swore their allegiance to Nintendo by. You know, that was what made Sega suck and Nintendo rule and, you know, all that stuff was... They had those things that spoke to kids, and when they went to school, they would go, you know, no, I go watch Captain Lou, that's apparently Mario in this cartoon, you know, and we go on an adventure every afternoon, and then I plug my Nintendo in and do the same thing, and
it's a whole different machine now.
Yeah, it really is.
And my kid, you know, he's 3 years old, and he loves Mario, of course, you know, when you see Mario, but... It's not going to be the same. I don't think it's going to be the same for him or his generation that it was for us, because it's not the only option out there.
Exactly.
And they get exposed to these other games, like your Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto's or
Saints Row. It's so unfortunate.
And that's what they're going to gravitate to, because unfortunately, for the most part, explosions are going to dwarf, you know, jumping on blocks or whatever.
I agree. When I was playing the Nintendo as a kid, ideally, the game I dreamed of playing when I was about 7 or 8 years old was Grand Theft Auto. I wanted to get in high-speed chases from the cops and jump bridges and all kind, you know, all this crazy stuff. And I can see why it appeals to a kid.
Oh, yeah, I'm not blaming the kid at all. I mean, that's just natural, you know, humanity, right?
There. Exactly, because it's only a matter of time you give a boy two toy cars before they're crashing them into each other. It might start off as a race, but down the line, things are going to get hairy, you know, and so that's, you know, and that does speak to those types of games, but I definitely think that, you know, you do see those kids that come in that are very parented, where, you know, they're not gonna their parents are not gonna let you, you know, sell their kid, you know, whatever crap game is out that month with whatever severed head on the front or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
That is nice. I mean, I do like still seeing parents say no, you know, like when that kid that's like overly excited about the violence, you know, and then the parents go, no, you can't have that. It's like, okay, thank you, you see it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, luckily there are still people in there, you know, that come into the GameStop or the Game Shop, whatever.
You want to get sued?
Yeah, exactly. They come into the store, and they're like, oh, I want to get the newest Skylanders. And that's fantastic. You know, you're losing a ton of money, of course, because these things cost $10 to $15 each. And you got to have them all, of course. Not even Pokemon was that bad. But it's something, you know, it's still violence in a way. But it's not to the point where it's so straightforward that people, you see blood and, you know.
Well, sure. I mean, no one was going, oh, my God, he saw someone get injured in Tecmo Bowl, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, the system is still based around, you know, they faint, you take them to the vet, essentially, the Pokemon Center, and they heal. And, you know, the whole idea of them being mythical creatures and everything like that kind of pushes that along. Whereas, you know, Call of Duty is super realistic violence. Like, there are RPGs hitting walls and dead bodies flying everywhere, and it's,
yeah,
it's a far, far, far cry away from, oh crap, your fire Pokemon burnt my grass Pokemon to death. Like, it's not showing a Bulbasaur, like, you know, cinders, you know, smoking and things like that. It's you know, it's more or less, you know, like, people that want to knock on it say, you know, it's rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
which I disagree, but, you know.
Yeah, it's a very weak argument.
Right, I agree. But, you know, more or less, because growing up as someone who played a lot of turn-based RPGs like Final Fantasy and things like that, it has a lot of those elements right off the bat. And to me, at least, you know, what I like about that game is, you know, if you teach kids how to play that game correctly, it can make them do math when they don't even realize they're doing it. Like,
right.
That game is so math-centric that any kid that I knew that was bad at math, I would tell their parents to buy them Pokemon and then teach them, you know, about how to add and subtract based on, you know, leveling and doing your effort values and things like that based, you know, exactly, times tables and things like that. And it just like when, you know, when I was a kid, I would have trouble counting anything that wasn't money. But if you put a dollar sign in front of it, damn right I could get it, you know? And it's just transferring it to something else.
Yeah, not to mention the reading that's involved in that game, which, you know, is a lot. Because every person you fight says something.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to read. You don't have to read. I guess you could just skip through it. But, you know, most people that I knew wanted to
absorb the story.
Go through the story. So, I mean, all in all, I think we kind of gotten off the beaten
path with this whole thing. Yeah, I mean, you're trying to drag me into this Pokemon discussion. Yeah,
exactly. All in all, I mean, I would recommend getting a 3DS for anybody who is on the fence about this whole next-gen console thing, because I think out of everything there is right now, the 3DS is going to be best supported by the company that's putting it out.
Outside of a tablet, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, but everybody has a tablet.
Because, I mean, that's the other thing that I don't like, you know, when people come in and they're looking for a system. And this does happen with regularity enough where someone feels like they have to have a designated gaming peripheral to get them, you know, away from doing other things. And I understand that. And I do think if that's your case, a 3DS is a great choice.
Right.
You know, and the only thing that really benefits you with the Vita is if you're already going to get a PS4 or you have a PS3 and you have PlayStation Plus, because if you're already paying for PlayStation Plus on your PlayStation home console, you're missing out on a whole other side of free games for that console. So, I mean, you can argue that it's sensible to pick one of those up and just enjoy all the free content that comes off the Plus subscription. But if you are someone that has, especially anyone that grew up a Nintendo kid and maybe they're not crazy like us and trying to find all the original artifacts, like, you can get a 3DS and pretty inexpensively build a nice collection of retro games all in your handheld, which you can't really, you know, if you are the kind of person that, you know, if you were going to spend money on a Super Nintendo to get three games, if you put that same amount of money into your virtual console, you'd have a pretty nice setup, you know, without really, you know, going over budget when you looked at how many games you got on your virtual console versus buying that bundle on eBay or whatever. I think you'd probably be pretty happy with yourself.
And to me, I'm not a huge fan of digital content. You know, I like having the physical copy there, but if anything, portable is where this all comes into play, because if you're downloading games onto your console, now you don't have to buy one of those stupid cases to put all your games in, so you can take it with you and try to fumble around and lose your games in your car for a year or so at a time. Now it's all on your console. You just go, oh, I don't want to play this anymore. Slide over here, pick this, and now I'm playing that, you know. And, of course, Earthbound is coming, which is...
And, God, if you're somebody that just can't stand the thought of paying that much money for a game like Earthbound, I mean, do yourself a favor and get that.
For those of you that don't know, Earthbound is going for about $150 for a loose copy right now that has a label torn and all that junk. It's insane. A box copy? Fucking forget about it. You're looking at over $500.
That's ridiculous. Like, unless you want to have immediate problems with your significant other, just sign yourself up for at least a month on the couch.
Yeah, and I've told you, my wife has been, like, kind of trying to get hints at everything. Don't you buy it. Don't do it. Please, I beg of you.
This is not a proof of our love.
Exactly. I cannot have that on my conscience, okay? Don't do it. But, it's like, and maybe these games are going to knock down the value of some of these older games that, you know, the physical copies of them. But at the same time, you're getting them for less than what they sold for.
An absolute fraction.
Yeah, originally, even. And maybe you're not getting the cool big strategy guide, and maybe you're not getting the scratch and sniff stickers that came with it, but you're getting the game, and it's going to look great on your 3DS, and you get to play it wherever you want. I'll probably buy it, because I probably won't find an Earthbound until then. Oh, well, it's coming to Wii U, I guess. You know, I forgot about that whole problem. It'll eventually come to 3DS, I'm sure.
Right.
So, but yeah, man. This has been a first good episode.
Yeah, expansive.
And there's still tons of shit we didn't talk about.
Yeah, we didn't talk about yard sale adventures or anything.
Yeah, and even the stuff we did talk about, there's stuff we didn't talk about there. There's the EA Sports stuff and stuff. So
Grand Theft Auto.
But this went so well, I think we're gonna have many, many more episodes coming, and we can kind of break it up, especially when those dry periods just hit and it's like, ugh, there's nothing out, there's nothing coming out, there's nothing. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, at least the E3 season will get us through. I mean, that's a ton of content.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're going to be jumping all over the place with when E3 comes.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I would consider, you know, most of the podcasts that you see that cover this stuff do, you know, one podcast for every day of E3. Absolutely. I could see us, you know, doing several episodes over the summer, still summing up things that we've seen, especially with how they're planning to do the reveals all kind of spotted in and around E3, because it gets really overwhelming, because a lot of the things that happen before E3, you forget by day two, you know.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, if they announce Fallout 4, we might as well change the fucking name of this podcast, because that's all we're going to be talking about is Fallout 4.
Done.
Fallout
4. Deal with it. Fallout Forecast. Here it comes.
That's such an awesome name.
Yeah, I'm there. Because that and we won't have anything to talk about. We'll just be sitting here going, I can't wait.
Right, and then the return of the return of Vats in the background.
Oh, fantastic. Sure. Double Vats this time.
Just clinking all over the place.
Yes.
All right, well, I think that does it for us. This has been the Game Time Report, and I've been Lex. That guy over there is Wario. Wario, this is your debut.
It is my vocal debut.
Your vocal debut, the mystery, well, at least one mystery, is now out of the box.
Well, you know, and, one at a time.
Yeah, exactly. We got to spread these mysteries out.
First. Yeah, no, I don't need to start hurting people.
thanks for joining us, guys. And next episode, I'm guessing, will be very soon. This should be a regular thing because it's just us bullshitting.
So. Absolutely.
Thanks, folks. See you later.
Indeed.